Hello, everyone, and welcome to New Matter, the SLAS podcast where we interview life science luminaries. I'm your host, Hannah Rosen, and today we are continuing our series on accessibility in the lab by focusing on having conversations around accessibility. Joining us today is Sarah Sawicki, PhD candidate at Yale University. Welcome to the podcast, Sarah.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure. So to start out with, would you mind just kind of giving us a little bit of your background and tell us what got you interested in the topic of accessibility in the lab?
Yeah. So I'm a fourth year PhD student at Yale in biophysics, and I work on jellyfish, which is really fun and exciting, and do a variety of kind of like in-person wet lab experimental work, sometimes a little bit of computational work, and recently dabbled a little bit in field work. So that has all been really fun to kind of get to see all the avenues of science that are possible. And then in terms of lab accessibility, basically I got involved because lab accessibility became something that was like very personally affecting me. And then from there, I kind of like realized how much of an issue it is in general. So I have a degenerative genetic disorder where basically my vision is kind of like decreasing over time. And this started when I was doing my undergraduate degree. So I didn't really have any issues until I was about like 20 years old. And then in the past like 5 years, it's progressed to the point where basically I have like really constricted tunnel vision. So my central vision is pretty good. And because of that, like most people can't usually tell that I can't see very well. So during the day, I have really constricted tunnel vision. And then in the evening, I am almost nearly completely blind. So how this translates into the lab is obviously during like my normal personal life, like this has a lot of effects on like social things and stuff like that. But in the lab, things like using microscopes, kind of like navigating new spaces, field work was really tough in terms of like figuring out what accommodations worked for me. And there's very few people with visual impairments, but also disabilities in general in science to like talk to in terms of to figure out what is most helpful. So basically, I just started doing a bunch of like research myself and a lot of brainstorming and talked about it with friends and realized that like so many different things in the lab are inaccessible to a lot of different people of like varying disabilities. So that's how I got into this. It's kind of, it was personally affecting me. And then I found that it was kind of like almost interesting actually to kind of like brainstorm new ideas of how to make labs accessible.
Yeah. I mean, that's fantastic that you were able to go out and do field work. I'm curious if you don't mind me asking, you know, what were those conversations like around getting those accommodations for doing field work? Because, you know, I've done field work in the past, and it didn't seem like the kind of environment where accommodations were taken lightly. Like, I mean, it was demanding for even, you know, people without disabilities. So I'm curious what, you know, how easy or difficult was it for you to have those conversations?
Yeah, it's definitely super demanding. We were doing stuff like all hours of daylight and before and after that. So in terms of that, I basically, before I went on this trip, I kind of was just like thinking about with my partner and some friends about like safety issues that I had and kind of what I could do to fix those problems to the best degree that we could and try to just be as open as possible about those issues. So after kind of like brainstorming with my friends, I then talked to my advisor about it, who my PhD advisor like already knows about my disability, and we've worked on stuff in our lab here on campus to make things more accessible. And she was very like understanding, and luckily like knew, she wasn't going on this trip with me, but like knew the people that I was going with, and she was like, I feel comfortable like advocating for you rather than you just like coming out of nowhere with these people that you don't really know like asking for all of these things. She was like, I'm happy to like vouch for you. So I'm really glad and like grateful that she was like so supportive about it. But basically we then like would talk to the people at the research station and ask like what the environment is like there and what we could do to make things a bit easier for me. So with like field work, basically, I asked for actually my partner to be able to be with me at the research station for the first few days so that like he could help me navigate the area in the evening so I could get to know the area, because that's really hard for me at night by myself. And I didn't know anybody that I was going with. It was like a workshop that we were doing, and I didn't want, like, I didn't feel comfortable just like asking random people I've just met to like hold my hand and walk me around everywhere. So that was really nice that they accommodated for that. And then other than that, it was like more normal-ish lab stuff, like making the microscopes accessible for me, and basically just like having them understand that like I might need more help, and like having an open conversation and like a dynamic conversation over time to see what we could do. Like, we were doing lots of snorkeling, and one of the instructors was like, oh, do you want to like use my like dive light, because that might help, and like showed me like how to use like gloves to make like things look like brighter or just like have a nice background while underwater. So people were really helpful and like really understanding, but also being there, I was like, wow, like things are really, really inaccessible. And I mean, it's kind of like an issue that just like happens worldwide, and obviously depends a lot on like funding for places to be more accessible. But I at least had a good experience. I know it can definitely be probably just not possible, depending on what your disability is. But luckily, people were able to like help me figure out how to make it work for me.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm sure it helped having your PI, who's a person in a position of authority, to be able to kind of come in and pave the way for you a little bit by talking to other people with you. That's fantastic. I'm so glad that worked out for you.
Yeah, it was great. It was also, I guess I also got a little bit of support from the university's like accessibility office in general, because I, going into it, I was initially like kind of freaking out, because I was like, I had no idea how this works, like at Yale or like any place in the US, like they are like required to like make things accessible for me. But I was like, I'm going to another country, and I'll be at a U.S. institution in another country, but I don't know what that means, like, legally. So they kind of helped support me in that they were like, if they, like, when you're there aren't doing anything and you need, like, money to buy something or just, like, people to help you have conversations, like, they were there to support me as well, which was also, like, super important. And luckily, we didn't really end up needing that, but it was nice to know that I had that, like, backup support.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of, you know, talking on a broader scale, you know, in general, why should we care about having these sorts of conversations around accessibility?
Yeah. So I think accessibility conversations are really important for a lot of different reasons. One of those is the concept of universal design. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's basically like designing things in such a way that they are accessible and usable to as many people as possible, kind of regardless of disability. So conversations around accessibility are important because, like, even in just like normal senses, people might be like, oh, I'm a morning person or I'm a evening person, and being able to kind of like find jobs and create your work schedule in such a way that can like accommodate that is usually like most useful to most people. Obviously not always possible, but that's kind of just like a really basic and like super common way that like accessibility and just the sense of like creating a life that works best for you is important. But in more in terms of like actual disabled people, a lot of people in the U.S. like are disabled. So in the U.S., it's almost like 20% of the population is disabled at some point in their life. And anyone can be disabled at any time, like if you break a leg or something like that and you need to be in a wheelchair or on crutches, you can always just become disabled, which is kind of unfortunate, but it was a fact of life. And making sure that things are accessible and being able to have like open conversations about how to change environments to make them accessible is really important, just so that not like every single human being has to have this conversation over and over and over again, because that's really frustrating, obviously. And in science, like, there's the disability representation is even lower than what it is in the total population. I think it's like 9% or maybe even lower than that, in terms of how many disabled scientists there are out of all scientists, which is a lot lower than 20%. So having these conversations in science is also really important, because not many people are talking about it. So it makes it easier to talk about it also the more you talk about it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I wonder, you know, because you're talking about this whole like morning person versus evening, like night person. And it kind of takes me back to when I was in grad school and we had, we would have some grad students who would, you know, roll in at like 10 or 11 and then work until, you know, 8 at night, just because that was what worked better for them. And it was an environment that was conducive to that. And I'm wondering, you know, both in academia and in the workplace, do you think that having conversations about that and people advocating for things that just work better for them personally, even if they don't have a diagnosed disability necessarily, but just saying, hey, my personality works better if I can do, you know, this work schedule. Do you think that that ends up helping people with diagnosed disabilities in the long run?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Like, if everyone was having that type of conversation, that would be like really helpful. For me, for example, like, I don't love working into the evenings because it gets dark and then it becomes like a whole thing that I have to like think about how I'm going to get home, which is like possible, but I don't love doing it all the time. So I usually ask like as much as possible, like if I'm just going to work during day hours. And luckily for me, I consider myself a morning person, so that works for me. But if I didn't have to have that conversation and people were just like, when do you want to work? And I would just work whenever, that would be that would be great, because then you don't have to like spend energy explaining why I'm asking for what I'm asking for, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes it less of a big deal and just sort of, part of the norm, which I think is the ultimate goal, really.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. So what can be some of the challenges that surround having conversations about accessibility, both, you know, as a person with a disability asking for accommodations or something, or even just, you know, in general, trying to make the environment more inclusive?
Yeah. So a lot of these conversations require like a lot of vulnerability and trust with the person that you're having the conversation with. And also just kind of like courage and confidence in yourself and what you're asking for. And having all of those things is very challenging. And I know, especially like with having these conversations with an advisor or any real superior, like, unfortunately, almost everyone I know that has to have these conversations is really uncomfortable and scared to do so, because they're worried that their advisor will think like, oh, you're just like making excuses, or not working hard enough, or being like, quote unquote, lazy. And that's really disappointing. And unfortunately, why like it is so scary to have these conversations is it's not something that's like unheard of. Like, I know people personally that have had that experience. And that's really tough to go through, because then you kind of have to decide like, okay, do I want to make this a big thing, or just like live life uncomfortably and potentially be even like more unproductive, which is really not in like your advisor's best interest. Being able to trust that what you are saying is going to be listened to is really important and taken seriously, and that you know that like you're not going to have this conversation again, or remind people over and over like that you need whatever. It's also often like a concern of like privacy, and that I know like a lot of people as well like are worried about having these conversations because they don't know fully like where this information is going to go. Like, the information should just stay with the person that's being told the information, but that's not always the case. And that's usually a concern and challenge as well. It's kind of like all of these things. And especially like if you also don't know for example, maybe what accommodation you need, which is really common in science, and that you're just like, this isn't working for me, but I don't know what is available. That requires a lot of like brainstorming on your part. And being able to do that like kind of ahead of time before having a conversation with an advisor can be difficult because it does require some back and forth. You're also almost kind of like proposing something to them, like, this is what like I think is best. And like having them trust you is really important. So yeah, it can be challenging for a lot of reasons.
Definitely. Do you have any advice for individuals who maybe are trying to have conversations about accessibility, but then the people that they need to have those conversations with, such as a PI or an advisor or a boss, you know, aren't being receptive to what they're trying to say? You know, do you have any advice for what you should do in those situations?
Yeah, so that's really tough. And I feel like my best advice as a first step is always to just like take a moment like for yourself to breathe and like know that what you're asking for is totally warranted and okay. And people being unreceptive is not like your fault. And you're not just making it up or things like that. And then once kind of like the person feels like ready to, I would say at least how things usually work at Yale, for example, and I think most universities in the US, is going back to the accessibility or disability office and telling them what the conversation was like, and seeing what the options are from there, whether that be figuring out a way to like compromise with your advisor and that you're like, okay, maybe I'm not going to get fully what I need, which is really disappointing. But I can do whatever, which is going to help a little bit. And hopefully advisors are a bit more receptive to that. Or I have also heard of people going and talking to the accessibility office and it kind of becoming a little bit of a bigger situation, and that the accessibility office is like, okay, no, we're going to talk to your advisor, like without you basically, and advocate for you and tell them that they have to do this. Because at the end of the day, they have to do it. Like it is illegal for them not to provide accommodations. And it's usually kind of a conversation of what they think is reasonable. And sometimes without like the student present, that conversation can go a little bit better because the advisor is not really talking to somebody that's under them, but like talking to somebody that they have to listen to if they want to like maintain happiness at their job. So yeah, those conversations are tough, but I think there are kind of like ways to go, and that ultimately the university wants to keep like their students happy, or even a workplace doesn't want to do things that like makes people really upset. So yeah.
Yeah. It is unfortunate though, because I would imagine, you know, after having those conversations between, you know, either an advisor and the student resources or, you know, your boss and HR, if you're at a company, I would imagine that your advisor or boss is probably, they might harbor a little bit of resentment, you know, after, you know, they'll be forced to do it, but it might not make for the best work environment. And so that's really, I mean, it's really disheartening. And I wonder if you would have any thoughts for, if there's anybody listening here who maybe has that very old school mindset of suck it up and deal with it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, your problem, not mine. You know, what would you say to them to try to make them understand why these accommodations and these conversations are so important to have with their students or employees?
Yeah, I think that's really, it's really tough, because you really don't know like what the person is going to say or how they're going to react. I think in like these cases, like, yeah, a lot of times that will create a very like awkward working environment, and it's potentially scary if you like need a letter of rec from this person for the future or a reference or something like that. And I think it kind of like comes down to, unfortunately, like deciding like how necessary it is for you to like work with this person. Like if you're in a lab and like this comes up relatively early on in your PhD, like do you need to like work with this person? Or is there somebody else that you can find that is more receptive and understanding? And you can go that route. But obviously that has like a lot of challenges in itself of just having to like talk to new people, learn new things, do a lot of like self-advocacy. Or otherwise, I mean, I guess like having conversations about like the importance of disabled people in the workplace is pretty good. I was looking into like some readings about like why disabled people aren't really in a lot of STEM spaces. And a lot of it is just because of attitude, of like bad attitude of people in the workplace around disability. And this one study found that actually having kind of like trainings where people, faculty or whoever, were shown that disabled people are in STEM and do productive work, and having like a variety of people in your workplace really helps for innovation and kind of just making everything comfortable for everyone. And then that can be shown to like be effective sometimes, but obviously the implementation of that is really difficult. And if you're already feeling like you are not being listened to by somebody, like further pushing and being like, oh, like, no, disabled people matter, like genuinely, that can be really hard to further talk about with somebody that's not being receptive. But potentially at more of like a higher level, an administrative level, it maybe can be helpful to just like talk about it more so that they will potentially become more receptive and like make it actually connect to them as a person in ways that maybe they feel like they're not being accommodated for, so that they understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point. And it's something that I think is valuable to discuss, is that these conversations shouldn't just be happening between somebody with a disability asking for these accommodations. We should be having these at all levels, because where we're going to see the most change probably is at these higher levels, you know, between the administratives and the, you know, advisors, or, you know, wherever that higher level of the organization is, like that's where change is going to be affected. And so, yeah, having those conversations at that higher level absolutely is crucial, I would think.
Yeah, definitely. It's something that I always hear people in the disabled community and STEM like talking about, of that they really just want more trainings for people at the higher level to know what disabilities are, how to go about having conversations about accessibility, things like that, because it often seems like people have virtually no training about it. So then it really does make it difficult for everyone, like including the faculty, in that they're like, they don't know what to do. And if they were told what to do, it would probably just be easier for everyone.
Oh, absolutely. And I think too, especially with, in my experiences with, you know, like, I don't want to generalize, but a lot of times you get with the older faculty or, you know, older staff, you kind of get this mindset of where I had to suffer through all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so you all have to suffer through it too. And so I think that that's a tough mindset to break as well, of just like, yes, these weren't available to you, and it would have been great if they were. So why aren't we making it easier for the next generation?
Yeah. It's unfortunate, because it does feel kind of like a radical mindset in a lot of ways, of being like, no, like, what if life was easier?
Exactly.
Does it need to be hard for everyone? I don't know.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I was always blown my mind of this idea that it's like, yes, no, life shouldn't be, you should be suffering and working extra hard to get through this part. And it's just like, well, why?
Yeah.
So, you know, to that end, if there are people out there listening who want to create a safe space for these conversations to have in their labs, you know, what are some of the things that either lab mates or advisors can do to create a safe space for having conversations about accessibility in the lab?
Yeah, I think simply like opening the space for that as much as possible, like when relevant, is kind of the first step of like when somebody first joins the lab, being like, is there anything you need in your lab space to make this work best for you? And that immediately like opens the door for you to share any accessibility needs that you might have, and shows that your advisor cares enough to have this conversation, which overall will lead everybody to be happier. So kind of on an advisor level, that's really helpful in terms of like just existing in a lab with other people. Having conversations with my lab mates is usually really nice as well. And that can be like as simple as just like, I've had conversations with my lab mates at different times, like probably not even like relevant to like something in lab. Like we were probably at a lab outing or something, getting something to eat. And I was like, oh, by the way, like I really can't see in the evening. Just FYI, if I start walking into things, like, you know why. And then that's led to actually in the lab, people asking me like, oh, do you need this? Like, do you need that? Is there some way I can help you if I seem to be like struggling with something? So having an open space and just like asking people often is the easiest way to go about it and to make people feel safe and comfortable because you're giving people room to be able to talk and not have to like self-advocate constantly and have to bring it up a lot. And of course, like there's extremes to this of that, like asking disabled people for like help constantly is not helpful. And knowing like limits to that, but kind of just like occasionally if there's something new going on, or like, for example, if someone moves something in the lab and like they would know that I would have trouble finding it, as like most people would, but that, like, I would have extra trouble finding it, letting them know, things like that are usually really helpful. I also think like recommending kind of ways to be involved in a community with people that are like understanding is really helpful. So for example, like at my school, we have a like peer mentorship program for disabled students, and promoting like things like that, like even if you're not a part of it, but just knowing like, oh, like if you think you want extra support for the people that really understand, like there's this program that I know of. So kind of just like being familiar with resources for new students or new people working in your lab is really helpful as well, so they can find community and support outside of lab and in lab together.
Yeah, that's really great advice. I wonder, you know, what are the differences between having these sorts of conversations with your lab peers and an advisor or school administrator? Because, you know, obviously with the school administration, your advisor, you likely have to have those conversations kind of right off the bat. Mm-hmm. But I imagine it can be a little more challenging to figure out when's the right time to bring this up with your lab mates or peers. So, you know, what's your advice on that front?
Yeah. With peers, things I find are usually often a little bit more relaxed and easier to bring up, because a lot of times like peers are your friends and people your age in the same like life situation that you are, and they want to support you. So I find that with friends, it's really dependent on the context of when basically accessibility needs come up that I'm like, okay, I should talk about this now. Unless it somehow organically comes up before that, which sometimes does happen. Fortunately for me, I guess I do a lot of like disability advocacy. So I'm always like, oh, I need to go do this thing. And people are like, oh, what is that? So then it like very organically like leads into a conversation about my vision. But in other cases, when that doesn't happen, it's usually just when something comes up that I'm like, okay, like, just by the way, like, this is what's going on. Like, if you have any other questions about it, like, let me know. This is just what I need. And people have always been like supportive about it. Like the only challenges really are sometimes just having to remind people, or people like not quite seeming to take it seriously. That they're like, oh, everybody struggles, everybody's blind. And I'm like, but they're not. So that's like the only challenging thing, but it's not that frustrating compared to like things with advisors and like genuine accessibility needs. Those things are kind of just like low level, like frustrating, at least for me. And yeah, so peers are usually okay, and lab mates are usually like really helpful and understanding. With school administration, I find Kind of unlike advisors in a way, like if we're talking about like the accessibility office or like other people like that are high up, like deans or something like that, they usually, like at least here, want to keep you happy. So like I rarely have a conversation with a school administrator that like I leave feeling super frustrated. Like I always feel like somebody is listening to me. It's just a matter of if like action is actually going to happen based off of that conversation or not. So sometimes like things end up falling through the cracks and that's frustrating. And like that's the challenge of like holding administrators accountable basically. But in general, those conversations themselves are usually okay until they reach the point that you're like, okay, we've talked about this 3 times and it's still not being fixed. So that's where that frustration comes from. But most of the time, I feel that they're trying to help. And it's kind of like barriers that they're having to go through to reach a solution. So most of the time, those seem okay. And then, yeah, advisors, like we were saying earlier, those are usually challenging in that you have to be like a lot more personal. And it's somebody you're working with like day to day, whereas like administrators, you're not seeing them every single day. So that can be tougher because it's a lot more has to do with like who you are and how you work rather than just like calling somebody up and being like, I need this for an administrator and then being like, ah, okay. Yeah.
I wonder, so I know a lot of times, you know, if you're working in a lab and maybe you have a lab mate or a peer that either you know or you suspect is struggling with a disability but hasn't felt comfortable talking about that with you yet, but you want to express to them that you're supportive and you're willing to, you know, advocate and help and, you know, just kind of be there for them. Are there any good ways to kind of approach that conversation to make sure that it's a safe, to let them know it's a safe space, but without kind of overstepping?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I think like a lot of times, like if you show that you're being a little vulnerable, people are more likely to like come forward as well and speak a bit more personally about the issues that they might be having. So for example, like, I don't know, I can't think of a super detailed example, but like if you're having some sort of issue that you're just like, oh, like, I'm just really tired or like I was sick or something and like didn't get a lot done and it, like so frustrating, like da da da, like kind of like sharing your own personal struggles with something, whether that be like illness or like you have a lot of family stuff going on or whatever that might be leading into some way like making your work life not as ideal as you would want it to be, and kind of saying like, yeah, like is there anything that is bothering you or like anything that you would want improved in the lab is really helpful. And just like having regular check-ins of just like, oh, is everything going in the lab okay for everyone? Or like, do you need anything? Might give space for people to say something, but it definitely can like take a while for a lot of people to open up and that's okay. Like if you see someone that you're like, they might like need help with XYZ, if it's something that seems like simple and not like really like kind of like outing them, I guess, by bringing it up, it might be okay. Like, I don't know, if I'm like looking for something on the floor, for example, people are like, oh, like, what are you looking for? Like, let me help you. Like, that's helpful without like really pushing too far into like what's going on. So kind of like starting small, I guess, and like being open and vulnerable yourself is helpful, and really nice to just create a comfortable workspace for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. So to that end, I wonder, you know, are there any differences with conversations around accessibility when it comes to invisible disabilities, such as like mental health issues, or I'm sure even for you, you've experienced it because your disability isn't immediately evident.
Yeah, definitely. I think that plays a huge role into how these conversations go and how like your accommodations end up being implemented. And that, yeah, for example, for me, like I can go a while without needing to tell anyone or anybody really suspecting anything. Like a lot of people just think I'm like quite clumsy, which is relatively normal. And like I am, I think outside of like not being able to see it very well, I think I just am. And that's okay. But I think like it can be a lot harder because it requires like somewhat like even more vulnerability, and just that you're like really have to open up and like trust that somebody's going to believe you even if they don't see like what you're talking about with your disability, because obviously they aren't you and they're not going to know. And hoping that people believe you is pretty much it, which is like unfortunate, because I think a lot of people do run into kind of like imposter syndrome like with disability. Like I know like I do sometimes, of that it's like, no, like I don't seem disabled enough for this, and that's really hard. So I think like there's a bit of a personal aspect of like working on your own confidence like in yourself to be like, no, this is what I need, and asking for that. And then there's the part that's the actual person that you're talking to and knowing that they're going to trust and listen to you. I think like sometimes like even providing resources or things like that is often helpful. Like I've had people tell me that like it would be useful for me and for others probably, in having these conversations to kind of like map out like what my vision looks like a little bit, so that they can like kind of anticipate and understand what's going on, and like they don't have to like ask me constantly like what I need or if like something is not working for me, and they can be a little bit more proactive about it. So I found that sharing resources is really helpful, or like I don't know, just talking about it. For example, with my advisor, when I first told her, she immediately was like, oh, I know somebody else that has that exact same condition, which was really cool, because I was like, oh, great, like you understand, like I don't have to over explain myself to you, because you have a friend that you like grew up with that you have experienced being around. So I think kind of trying to find a way to like relate, to get people to relate as well, is helpful, because I feel like everyone knows people that are disabled, whether they know it or not, because of invisible disabilities. So kind of trying to humanize it a little bit is helpful as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just thinking as you were saying that, you know, you'd mentioned earlier that something like 20% of the population is struggling with a disability. And so I would imagine, yeah, we probably all know way more people who have disabilities than we realize. And maybe, yeah, you know, the more common these conversations become, the more people will realize that, oh, I do know a lot more people with these disabilities and they've been struggling a lot more than I realize.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think in a lot of cases, like it's kind of like about like disability identity a little bit too, of whether somebody that like does have something that would qualify as a disability, like wants to have that conversation and like be involved in that space, because like there are a lot of people, like it's tough to say like you're disabled and comes with a lot of assumptions that people might make about you, and that's not easy depending on what environment you're in. So there's a lot of people that I think don't want to identify as disabled even though they might be, and so don't have these types of conversations, but it is genuinely, yeah, like easier for everyone, like the more people that are talking about it, then like the more comfortable everyone can be in their workplace and also just like with themselves and being able to function like a normal human being.
So one more thing that I really wanted to kind of talk about was, you know, we talked kind of at the beginning of the podcast about field work and your experiences there. But there's another area that I feel like kind of gets overlooked pretty often, which is, you know, academic and professional conferences and the accessibility there. And it's something where I feel like we're not really having a lot of conversations about accessibility there. So can you kind of share, what are some of the accessibility challenges that are common at these conferences, and how can people work to make their presentations or experiences at conferences more accessible?
Yeah, that's a great point. Because I feel like they are kind of like short little things that people are like, oh, whatever, like people will figure out what they need. We don't need to like focus on it. But conferences can be super inaccessible to a lot of people. And I know like a big one that I've heard about a lot since COVID started is people that are immunocompromised or have like chronic fatigue and things like that, that it's really difficult to spend all day, like 4 days in a row in this like new place, like staying in a hotel and having to travel to get there and then having this like super demanding schedule where a lot of the times you're going to be like listening to people or talking to people and have to be like quote unquote on, like the whole day can be really hard for some people. So I think in that sense, like having breaks or like knowing that like people are not going to be at all sessions, and that's fine. And I think everyone experiences that of being like, I'm just gonna sneak out now and hopefully no one notices. And just like speaking that that's okay. And you don't need to be at everything, but also having like virtual components to things, and not making it like weird if somebody's like on the virtual part, and making sure that they also feel included even if they're not physically in that space. And I think that's a big conversation and something that I've seen at least a lot of conferences are doing, are still having virtual components even if they are returning to having like big annual in-person conferences, which is nice. And then in terms of presentations, I know for people with that are deaf or have hearing impairments that obviously having like sign language interpreters there is helpful, but I also know like not everyone that is deaf uses sign language. So it can also be nice to have kind of like real-time captioning available, which is easy, luckily, I guess, when things have become on Zoom, because Zoom just has like a live transcript available, which is really great. But in person, we don't have like subtitles following us around everywhere. Although you can make that happen. So I think it's like a relatively new technology. It's called, I have the name written down, let me just find it. It's called like captioning real-time transcript or something. And the acronym for it is CART. And it's basically just like having a microphone that everybody that's going to speak is going to speak on a microphone, which is helpful if you're in a big room as well, obviously. And then the person that is using this technology has like their own like headphones that are connected to the microphone so they can hear and have that transcribed in real time, which I know is really helpful for presentations or even just like genuinely talking. Like if you're at like a social and allowing people that are hard of hearing to be able to participate in these conversations as well in ways that like they haven't for a long time, unless there's like an ASL interpreter there. So that's a really big one. And then for visual impairments and people that are blind, visual presentations can obviously be really difficult to translate into something that would work for people that can't see like a figure or a whole presentation. So something that's often recommended is to make like your slides or a poster available to the person that has that type of visual disability ahead of time, but also like in the moment, so that they can have a digital like component of that to be able to have like the text that's on the slides or on your poster read out to them, and then having like alt text for any pictures or figures that are there so that they know at least what they're looking at. And obviously this is kind of like easier as well if it's like a poster presentation, because you're usually like talking back and forth with the person, so they can very clearly explain to you what's going on in all parts of their poster, even if the person can't see the poster. But with PowerPoint presentations can be a little bit harder because it's usually like one person talking to like a big room of people. So being able to like have those slides for their own review is helpful for sure. And other than that, I think like just having spaces that are kind of like a variety of spaces for like networking and things like that, like having rooms that like if there's alcohol involved might end up being quite loud, and that might not work for people that have autism or ADHD or other types of neurodiverse people or people that just want to like sit and be in a relaxed space rather than in like a loud bustling space with a bunch of people, having space that's kind of more just like quiet tea coffee time so people can chat in a more calm environment is really helpful as well, because those are often like components of conferences that I feel like don't always have that type of accessibility implemented in them, because they're kind of sometimes seen as like extra. But obviously I feel like a lot of times with conferences, like the most useful parts of the conference are when you get that chance to like actually network and talk to other people. So making sure that those are available is really helpful. But overall, like I think what's most useful is when you're first had the registration for the conference and things like that, leaving a space open for people to say what they need. So you know who's going to be there and what type of accommodations you want to account for when you're planning the conference is really the first step that everyone should do. And then everything on top of that of kind of just like making sure where you can, like implementing a lot of accommodations ahead of time without people needing to ask necessarily is also really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are some really, really great insights and a lot of stuff that, yeah, I hadn't even really thought about, but now I'm definitely going to be thinking about.
Yeah, I didn't know like several things and I was like, oh, these are really cool ideas. And yeah, reading about them was interesting to get to learn what type of stuff. Ooh. I just found CART stands for Communication Access Real-Time Translation.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for that. That's awesome. Well, unfortunately, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to just ask real quick, is there anything that we didn't get a chance to talk about today that you think is really important to add to this topic of having conversations around accessibility?
I think my like takeaway point would just be to be kind to other people and not assume that people aren't paying attention to you or are very clumsy or like aren't working to the expectation that you might think people are working at. Just being kind and leaving space for people to comfortably talk to you about issues they might be having is really all that's necessary. And like you don't, like, obviously, all of these fancy technologies and things are really amazing and super helpful. But at the end of the day, just having basic conversations human to human is like the most important part before getting into how to actually implement accommodations and make science accessible and to talk about it with other people, because disabled people would love other people to be interested in accessibility, because it really does help everyone.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us today. It's a real pleasure to have you here, and we look forward to keeping this discussion going and seeing you at future SLAS events.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. These conversations are really important, so thank you for giving me a space and others to chat about this as well. It's really awesome.
Our pleasure.